We always start on time.
Okay. So we'll move ahead to the second parak. Last week's conversation was quite interesting, I thought. Kaf Bet Amar Aleph.
Well, since it's time for the Shani part, I'll just point out that Sue posted a thing last night, right? Jupiter and Venus.
That's Jupiter and Venus?
Jupiter and Venus, right, and they're getting closer every day.
Uh-huh. Those streetlights over there?
They said already. But on Sunday night, they're going to be this close. And then they're going to switch positions. So you should, like, watch it, like, also on Friday, Sunday night. So you should watch it, like, on Friday, Saturday, Sunday, and Monday. You'll see them zoom and switch by.
How far away?
I assume they just look close, and they're not
they just
really
look close.
Close.
Right.
There's no chance they're going to hit each other, right?
There's no chance, yeah. I'm really bad at these numbers, but Venus is probably, like, you know, like 60 million kilometers away, and Jupiter is like 500 million kilometers away. But
in the other direction.
Venus is close, right. I mean, they're in the same direction.
Oh, no.
Jupiter's how far away? Five?
Something on the order of 500 million kilometers.
How far away from the Earth in kilometers?
For the Sun, give or take 100 million kilometers.
And the Earth is how far away from the Sun?
93 million miles.
Yeah, no, but he's speaking kilometers. 150 million kilometers.
Right.
And how far are we away from Jupiter?
So it's about 500 million kilometers.
You mean how far is our orbit from Jupiter's orbit?
Jupiter is multiples further away from us than we are from the Sun.
Oh, yeah. Right.
Yeah. But still, you can see it so bright in the sky.
It's really, really, really big.
Yeah.
See the Sun, too.
Yeah, but the Sun is much bigger than Jupiter, and it's much closer. Okay. The Mishnah. So again, we're still talking about Kiddush HaChodesh.
Can you use that next time?
No. We're still talking about Kiddush HaChodesh and the Kiddush Al Pi Re'iyah. And the sugya that we're going to get into deal with the question of the reliability of witnesses and the procedure in the Bet Din. But we said last week when we had those curious halachot in the Rambam about this procedure in the Bet Din, remember we said that there were different functions of court procedures. There are dinim. Reuven says Shimon owes him money. You go to Bet Din tries to figure out what's the truth. Shimon turns up dead, Reuven is accused, Bet Din tries to figure out what's what. But then there are other things in which Bet Din functions as a representative of the Jewish people. And it could be that's what these calendar things are. And it explains how you have this curious function where even if witnesses come, we can try to suppress the testimony. And if we don't succeed in suppressing, if we have a reason to align the calendar in a certain way, and if we don't succeed in suppressing the testimony, and they give evidence that shows that Rosh Chodesh was on Tuesday and not on Wednesday, so Bet Din, in extraordinary circumstances, has the authority to set aside that decision. To say, it doesn't matter what the evidence is, this is what we say it is. Because the Kiddush HaChodesh is a different function than regular cases of finding of fact and finding of innocence or guilt or chiyuv or ptur. And what's the raya for this? Where does the Rambam put Hilchos Kiddush HaChodesh?
Which book?
Zmanim. Now you gotta understand why it's in Zmanim.
Yeah.
But it's not exactly like the other Zmanim. It's not like Hilchos Purim. It's not like Hilchos Shabbos. It's not like all of the Zmanim are what's in Sefer Zmanim?
Chagim.
The Chagim and Shabbat. And Eruvin, which is
tied in with
which is a sif of Shabbat. Yeah. So you might have thought that it should go where? No. In Zmanim.
After Shabbat.
Maybe after Shabbat.
Before the Chagim.
Before the, and that's because obviously Shabbat works in a different. The Shabbat is not dependent upon the calendar. It's dependent on being able to count to seven. So either have Shabbat, maybe Shabbat and Eruvin, which are really one unit. Then Kiddush HaChodesh, which is the procedural matter of knowing what the dates are, because the dates are going to be very important for knowing when to eat the matzah, and when to blow the shofar, and when to shake the lulav, when to light the Nerot Hanukkah. Or put it at the end, right? Because it's a kind of appendix to all of the. Here's some facts you need to know. But it's right there in the middle of
What order is it?
It's before Hanukkah and Purim. So you could say, okay, it is at the end. The Hanukkah and Purim are appendix because they're Dirabanan. But it could have been in
Sanhedrin.
Well, there's no Sanhedrin in the Mishnah Torah. Mishpatim. Right? Because it's procedurally a Betin matter. Right?
But it's not, but Kiddush HaChodesh there, if I recall, doesn't only discuss the actual laws of Kiddush HaChodesh, but also the calendar, no? Which is actually not, which is independent of the actual Betin sitting. So.
Right. Or so you could have split it up. You could have put the calendar halachot. I mean, it wouldn't make sense. Obviously, they're meant to be together. But you could imagine a parallel universe in which a Mishnah Torah has the luach matters, meaning the permanent luach stuff, in Zmanim, and the Eidos stuff in Mishpatim. But the fact that Rambam puts it in Zmanim shows that he thinks that categorically it doesn't really fit in Mishpatim, where the other Betim stuff, where the other Sanhedrin stuff is. That's just an interesting ha'ara.
I mean, I don't know enough about the other Tafkidim of Sanhedrin, but it seems that either way you look at it...
Well, check your notes. You learned Sanhedrin a couple of years ago.
I wasn't here then. Yeah. Either way...
Is this going to be on the test?
Either way, all the laws of the Betin of Kiddush HaChodesh is the Yotzei Dofen. And I assume that the other things that Betin does, you know, they're machria, right? They either have a subcommittee or whatever, and then they decide. They don't, like, bring in testimony to, I don't know, like, what other example there could be. Prisbol or other things that Sanhedrin does, right? They don't.
Prisbol, Sanhedrin doesn't do Prisbol. Any Betin could do Prisbol, but, yeah.
Maybe you can come up with some examples. Like it's really this weird thing because Ki'ilu Betin has the authority to just machria that, you know, today is Rosh Chodesh or today is Rosh, you know, like Hillel did in the end with our current calendar.
Right.
They didn't bring witnesses. They just decided, okay, from now on this is the calendar. So they have the authority and they have the authority.
They don't really have. Betin can't decide if there's no witnesses. They can't decide that Lamed is Rosh Chodesh. Is that correct?
They can't decide that Lamed is Rosh. In other words, technically, in a state of nature, in a state of nature, if no witnesses come on the day after the 29th is either the 30th or it's the 1st. So they sit around all day long waiting to see if witnesses come, right? But if no witnesses come, then de facto, it becomes the 30th, and the next day becomes Rosh Chodesh. However,
like in this example, however, Mishnah, if witnesses come on the 30th, Betin can, you know, be done.
And not only that, but at a certain point, Betin understood. In other words, even though we were still dependent on witnesses, this is what the Rambam says, right? Even though we were dependent on witnesses, they knew astronomically when Rosh Chodesh was. Mm-hmm. Right, and they knew that there were days when the molad was such that it was going to be invisible to everyone, because it wasn't going to rise before it wasn't going to be astronomically visible.
But right? They couldn't make it Rosh Chodesh.
No, but and basically they did. Right? In other words, they used this power. If they had a need for Rosh Chodesh the previous month to be Chaser instead of Mubar, they could have done this.
That's interesting. Maybe what's actually going on here is
do with it as you please.
Exactly.
Maybe the idea here is that Beit Din doesn't actually have the ability to determine whether it's the 29th or 30th. They have the ability to determine whether it's the 29th. Or whether it's like
whether it's the 30th or it's the 31st.
Right, the 30th or the 31st. They have the ability to decide the day of Rosh Chodesh, but whether it's the last day of the month happens me'elav.
Right.
They don't have the ability to. They don't change it. It's kind of like you can accept early Shabbat if you want to.
Right.
But if you don't accept early Shabbat, Shabbat is there whether you accept it or not. Thing,
it's a misnomer when we say, are you making early Shabbat or late Shabbat?
Right.
You know what late Shabbat is? That's called Chayv Karis.
Right. And so, that's an interesting point. They can't, they can only do half of it. And so maybe that's why they have the ability to, that's why they can reject. That's why they have the ability to reject in ways, people who came and gave Edut that it was actually earlier, because the fact that it would be later, the fact that it would actually be, that we don't, the fact that, yeah. that we can just say that, it's like we're just not going to accept that and we're going to go back to the default.
Not only that, but they had reason to not want Rosh Chodesh to be on certain days. So in our fixed calendar, we have, one of the principles of the fixed calendar is Lo Adu Rosh, that the first day of Rosh Hashanah cannot come out on Adu, Aleph, Dalet, or Yom Shishi. Right? Why? Because that'll mess everything up. It'll cause all types of problems. We don't want, first of all, you don't want... No. You don't want Yom Kippur to come out on Shishi and lead right into Shabbat, or on Rishon leading right out of Shabbat. And also they didn't want Hoshana Rabbah to come out on... Hoshana Rabbah never comes out on Shabbat.
Because they couldn't do
that. Right? In other words, because this minhag of the Hoshanas was so considered so significant that they didn't want to have to miss it by having it on Shabbat. There were all types of reasons that the calendar had to be set up. So the main thing seems to be the problem of having Yom Kippur tail ending into or out of Shabbat. But even in the times of Kiddush Al Pi Re'iyah, they didn't want Adu Rosh.
Well, there's an opinion I remember hearing.
And they would try to jimmy it around to make sure that it wouldn't happen.
There's an opinion I once heard.
Even though obviously it had to happen sometimes, that...
Well, no, not necessarily, because I heard this opinion. I don't know what the name of the Gonim or one of the early Rishonim. Even in the times of Apireya, they still followed the calendar. It was only, they didn't... The calendar was set.
Right, so what did you do if Adam came in and said they saw the moon on a day that would have not... Those are the halachot that we learned last week in the third paragraph.
Right, they knew exactly where it was going to be each month, and it was set.
Close the door.
Is it Sadigon who says that?
Sadigon is like, if we didn't talk about it before, Sadigon says worse than that, more extreme. He says, Halacha Moshe Mi-Sinai, the calendar is always by Cheshbon.
Right.
And it was just as Tufa during Beit Sheni when the Karaites and the Baitwini were saying, your Cheshbonot are wrong.
This is what we're getting into now. So here's the Mishnah. Im Einan Makirinoto. Im Einan Makirinoto. If the Betin didn't... Right? Rashi says, Im Ein Betin Makirin et Ha'ed Im Ne'eman V'Kasherhu. Right? Somebody shows up and they give test. How does Beit Din know that this guy can be trusted? So Mishalchin imo acher lahaido. You send someone else, right? In other words, you saw the moon here in Efrat. So you'd go to the Beit Din here in Efrat, and they would say, they would first give you like a, what do you call that? An interview, right? Just to make sure that you're not going to waste your time and Beit Din's time by. And not only that, but if you had to travel on Shabbat, the local Beit Din wanted to make sure that you weren't going and not, for a waste of time, right? Because you thought it was the moon, but really it was the street lamp, which would have been really remarkable. Because they don't
know. Yeah. That happened to me once, by the way.
Oh, yeah.
I was in Kibbutz Teretz Tzvi back in 1990. And there was,
you were in Roswell.
I was in Teretz Tzvi in 1990, and I had broken my glasses. And I was just trying to get by. I did get most of the time. But then they had a Khadira from Jordan into the Kibbutz. And they kept sending up flares. It was in Sukkot, so we were outside watching the flares go up so they could find out what was going on with the Khadira. And one time I said, wow, that flare is going up and it's not coming down. And it was the moon. But for months, people did not let me live that one down.
So, in other words, so the Betin would say, okay, Taka, you're the bearer of the testimony. You can go to Beit HaMikdash and you can even be Mechal Shabbos to get there. But what's the problem? He's going to show up. He's Stama Joe. Right? In other words, like, if Nagid, here we were in Efrat, so Rabbi Riskin, Bechvod of Atzmo, saw the moon, so he's going to go, they're going to know, they're going to see, he's the rabbi, they're going to know he's reliable. But what if it stumps somebody? How the Betin's not going to accept him? So the local Betin can send along someone else to testify that the aid is reliable. Anybody get married here? Did you get married in Israel?
Not recently. Yeah.
we all got
not
married.
Not recently, though.
No?
Yeah.
No?
America.
Oh, you got married. So, you know, I made Aliyah. And then I got married. And they did this two things at the same time. So when you make Aliyah, you have to prove that you're Jewish. So it's like a hassle. And then a month later, you get married, you have to prove that you're Jewish. It's not good enough that you proved you're Jewish from the Strata Pnim, you have to prove you're Jewish for the Rabbanut.
And that you're single.
And also that you're single. So, when I had gone to make Aliyah I had a letter from my rabbi in America, and I had a copy of my parents' ksuba, and I had, I don't remember what else I had. And it was fun. And then when we were getting married, so someone else had gone and they told me they had trouble and they had to go back like three times. So I didn't want to have to go back three times. So I had with me my parents' ksuba and a letter from my rabbi, and I was teaching in the yeshiva then, and I brought two guys. You know, it's like amazing. You go into the Beis Medrash and you say, hey, who wants to like leave the Beis Medrash and come with me to Yerushalayim? They were volunteers. People were prepared to sacrifice in order to help me get married.
You can get people from work to leave, but you'd be able to leave guys from the yeshiva.
So I grabbed two guys. Now these guys, how did they testify? They saw me daven. They saw me on film that morning, right? So I also brought with me. I had my klaf, my tu'udat smicha from YU. You know, it's written, it's handwritten, and it's whatever. So I get there, and the pakid like didn't exactly know what to do with it, because they have like this form, like different, they check off like what you brought. So there was no, it didn't fit into his box. So he, you know, because there was no, as it said, you know, letter from the rabbi, check. Parents, ksuba, check. But there was nothing that said, rabbinical ordination certificate. So witnesses, witness people that came, live witnesses. So so he calls over his supervisor. And the supervisor looks at it and he laughs and he says to me, if you think the fact that YU gave you smicha proves that you're Jewish, eino ela toe. You're mistaken. I don't know.
But when I made Aliyah, right after I made Aliyah, there was this whole scandal because Yisrael Chinuch wasn't accepting diplomas from YU.
Yeah, right.
You know, like, you know, you couldn't, because YU was too lenient or something, because they gave credit for,
because he got credit for Israel.
So it's like, you know, no, you don't. We don't want to accept.
So
I didn't want to accept my brother-in-law's, my Masadar Kedushin, even though I showed his smicha from the mirror and from had a couple.
So in Makirin Oto, if they're not going to recognize the reliability of the witness, so the local folk would send along another witness to testify that he is reliable. Barishona hayu mekablin edet achodesh mikol adam. Originally, you showed up
They you know, everybody was kosher. Mishakilkalu habaitusim hitkinu shelo yehu mekablin ela min hamakirin. After the baitusin messed things up, so then they got machmir and they only accepted testimony from people that were known to, recognized by the betin.
Like the video clip you sent
on the Rabbanut's list.
On the Rabbanut's list, as you know. I mean, everybody got married, but nobody got divorced.
To the local Betin, for instance, they have that list, and they say to the guy that came, he wasn't on the list. Don't be Mechallel Shabbos, don't go.
No. You're confusing the two cases. In the first case, you go to the local Betin, and the local Betin just signs off that, yeah, what you saw, it's worth going. Right, and that's, but if the guy says I saw the moon in the east, and they know you couldn't have seen the moon in the east, and you're going to get there, and you're going to tell the Sanhedrin that you saw it in the east, and they're going to kick you right out. It's not worth going, and certainly we cannot authorize or advise you to be mechallel Shabbat for testimony which doesn't have a leg to stand on. Right, but if they sign off that, yeah, this sounds like reasonable, there's reason for you to go to Bet Din, so then they would send along somebody with you in order, maybe one of the Dayanim of the local Bet Din,
character reference.
As a character reference. Who are these Baitusim? So as you know, there were different sects, different non-normative breakaway Jewish heretical sects. Among the most famous were the Tzdukim and the Baitusim, named after their founders, Tzadok and Baitus, who lived in the times of the early Tanaim. They were both rejectors of the Torah Sheba'al Peh, in ways that are reminiscent of the more familiar Karaite. You know, the Karaites came much later. When were the Karaites?
900.
Yeah, and as the Karaites, well, they're still Karaites, but the Karaites are founded by
Anan.
In the 900s, right? In the Tkufat, that was, he was the founder of that was his name
from Karo to
yeah, right. They're in the Tkufat HaGaonim. So the same rejection of the Torah Sheba'al Peh. Now all of these sects, the Tzdukim and the Baitusim and the Karaim and others, who reject Torah Sheba'al Peh, it doesn't mean that they completely reject Torah Sheba'al Peh. I mean, it's not possible not to have some kind of interpretive tradition.
In fact, regarding the specific issue, I was always wondering, how do they determine the calendar now? They have the
who's they?
Let's say they have Alpi Raya, which they do, but they still have to have some sort of, you know, count, like
they still have to have some halacha.
Yeah. And there's nothing in the Torah about Ibura Chodesh.
Right.
So how do they do it? They don't have a lunar calendar.
So they have it because they have a Torah Sheba'al Peh, which is the same as ours.
If you look in the thing, if you look on the Karaite website, they say to follow the same calendar we do. I'm like,
right. because the Karaites, when we say the Karaites reject Torah Sheba'al Peh, it doesn't mean that they had no Torah Sheba'al Peh, that they were Old Testament literalists. Who was that guy that wrote that book, The Year of Living, The Year of Living, where he tried to live biblically, which is crazy because that's what we do, right? But he had this crazy idea. He was going to go back to the Pshuto Shel Mikra, unfiltered through any kind of interpretive tradition, right? And he was doing it as a thing to write a blog and write a book and whatever it was.
You know the carrot the carrot who we met with.
I assume it's Nick Gordon. Yeah. He's the only carrot.
Who's that?
Nick Gordon was from originally from Chicago. He actually was an old friend of mine at Toby's, and he's one of the leaders of the carrots. We haven't had contact with him.
But he's from a carrot family.
Not at all. No, his father's a rabbi, but in high school that's how he decided to rebel.
And he became a Catholic.
It was a good rebellion to be like the.
What, sex, drugs, and rock and roll wasn't sufficient form of rebellion? He had to become a Karaite?
No, he's become, I mean, it's been like 25 years.
That's fascinating.
Henry Gordon, if you look online or whatever, he talks about the moon, he talks about the barley for Nissan and the whole thing. It's a big thing.
Where does he live?
Yerushalayim, I think. You probably know people in his
family. I've never heard of him.
Well, since you're telling carriage stories, I went to a Kiddush HaKodesh seminar at Bar Ilan. They used to have them like every year. And so Sony was doing a thing on, you know, I mean, they were talking about Kiddush HaKodesh, and when exactly did our calendar start in its current form? So he puts up a slide, and it was like a mimeograph in those days. It was a slide. It was a picture of pages from the Karaite calendar of, you know, Tavshin, whatever, of that year. And he was like talking about some of the differences in the Karaite calendar. So afterwards, I go over to him. I said, you know, where can I get a, you know, where'd you get that Karaite calendar? He goes, I'm in charge of the Karaite calendar.
I'm the Karaite.
He's the guy that like does the calendar. So I forget what his name is. I have written down. No, but so they do Re'iyah like just once a year for Tishrei.
The Muslims also do Re'iyah.
But they don't have the Muslims.
They don't have any. That's why you never know when it's going to be Ramadan. But you know, like on the calendar, you know, it's like when it, like if you buy like a calendar, you know, like if you go to in America, if you buy a calendar, now in America they have like every holiday, you know, it's very pluralistic. So it'll say Ramadan will be on March 21st, or maybe it'll be on March 22nd. Because in other words, when they print the calendar, they don't yet know whether it'll be Chaser or.
It's worse than that because it depends where you are in the world.
Right, and they have different Ramadans.
You know, I mean, so. Since we're mentioning that, like, you know, we shouldn't take this for granted. The fact that aside from the Karaites and the Shomronim, who don't have our calendar, although sometimes it happens to work out, like we have Achdut, you know, for the last at least 2,000 years in the calendar, except for that one time in the 900s. And it's like, you know, even the Muslims, like every year there's fights about...
Isn't there some small Hasidic community that's cholik on certain dates about certain things?
Yeah, sure.
No.
I haven't heard of that, no. Unless they cross the international date line or something.
I once heard from the professor... Still alive, Professor Weiss from Shluchot. What's his name? A professor in Bar Ilan. What's his name? He taught also in Sarim, and he was like an expert in the calendar. And he pointed out, I think, that there was like a real problem with the calendar we have now. I think you mentioned this year last week. There's a problem with it.
It doesn't actually
because Nisan can fall in the time that actually, according to at least the Gregorian. Or the Julian calendar, according which we don't because we never fixed this calendar right. We use not it doesn't actually
the
match
calendar
to the
Chutzlaris goes according to the
Julian calendar, and that Julian calendar, the Julian spring, Pesach doesn't fall in the Julian spring, so the problem with the calendar. But
no, it's worse than that. Pesach doesn't fall like in the real astronomical.
Well, that's not a problem. We never adjusted to it. But even according to its own sheet, that we don't fall because every year it falls off a little bit. And how would we ever possibly fix that? It's a real problem.
Mashiach will give me a little.
No, but we're there now already. We've had it. And we've had it not fall in the spring.
The problem is easy.
You said
that. It's a matter of agreeing.
Right.
The Karaites, it's not that they don't have any.
No, so they do have some.
So what do they have?
Like, so they have certain. They reject a lot of mainstream rabbinic interpretation. But they have interpretation. Right? You know, there's this question of like Ibra Chodesh and other things. So they do have certain oral traditions. And when we say that they reject Torah Shabbat Peh, it doesn't mean they reject it lock, stock, and barrel. There are certain things that they accept. And there are certain things where they have an oral tradition which differs from rabbinic tradition. And there are certain things where
I don't think they're going to claim, you know, I don't think they would claim that the oral tradition is the equivalent of like Halacha L'Moshe M'Sinai. Right. They're saying, we looked at the Torah and either we understood it this way, and it makes sense according to the Pshat. Or we had to decide to do something because there was no way around it. But it wasn't like we say it goes all the way back to.
It's open to interpretations. Right. Whatever they agree upon.
So the Baitusim, the Baitusim, it's called Baitusim because their leader was somebody named Baitus. They reject aspects of Torah Shebaal Peh, but there was a deeper philosophical complaint. They reject the concept of Olam Haba. And because they don't reject God, right? But they reject the idea of Olam Haba.
Well, sure, because it's actually not mentioned in the Torah.
Yeah, and therefore, if you reject the concept of Olam Haba, it has this interesting phenomena of altering how you view Olam Hazeh. And it changes your view of reward and punishment. And it changes your view of what proper behavior in this world is, if this is the only world. So they had this idea of, eat, drink, and be merry. For tomorrow you die, and that's it. Sof pasuk. And therefore they said, one should benefit from all of the material pleasures of this world, because that is sakhar.
Like Epicurean, in a
way. Yeah. So they were machmir only to eat and drink from gold vessels and cups and plates, and because that was a sign of God's pleasure with you, because you were being rewarded in this world by these types of things. That's why when Chazal talk about the Olam Haba being like a su'uda, they use this metaphor of a su'uda, right? But not a physical su'uda, but the su'uda where you're nehene miziv hashchina, where you benefit from whatever being plugged directly into the godly knowledge. So the use of su'uda as a metaphor might be to say, aha, foolish baitusim. I do think the su'uda is here, you eat off of gold plates. The real su'uda is the su'uda latid lavo.
The idea of the president on the taklin, because you're going
to... Yeah, right. So the baitusim were always apparently a very minority sect, because to get in, it was for the 1%. Right? You had to be able to afford the gold plates.
Tzedukim more like that.
The Tzedukim had different terms. This was the Baitusim. But one of the things the Baitusim had was the interpretation of the Pasuk about the Omer. Right? What does Mimacharat HaShabbat mean? Well, so what do we say Macharat HaShabbat means?
We say it means Motzei Chag Rishon.
A Motzei Chag Rishon of Pesach, you bring the Korban HaOmer, and you start counting 7 weeks till Shavuos. And the Baitusim said, no, Macharat HaShabbat Pshuto Kemashmo'o. As we say, Macharat HaShabbat, the Yom Shabbaton, the Yom that you didn't do Malacha on the first day of Pesach, which could have been on Shabbat, but it could have also been on Wednesday, or it could have been any day of the week. So they said, no, it's fixed. In the Baitusi calendar, Shavuos always came out on Shabbat. On Sunday. On Motzei Shabbat.
It's a long weekend.
On Motzei Shabbat, I mean. So what were the Baitusim doing trying to mess up the calendar? They were trying to jimmy it so that the rabbinic calendar, the Prushim, would come out on Motzei Shabbat.
A great shir on
white. So that the calendars would align.
There's a great shir on Yayit Torah by Lyman about this whole topic of how they did that. How actually, not just they were trying to, but actually there were times when they were in control of the calendar.
Right.
Or maybe the Tzedukim. Well, there were times when they were in control of the calendar, and that actually is what happened.
Right. Anyway, the Gemara says, so if they don't recognize the aid, you send along Meshalchin Imo Acher Lehaido. My Acher, what do you mean you send along another person? Chad?
V'chad
Mimeheman. But what does it mean? But an individual is not reliable. Meaning, aid is you can't have. That's, I need somebody to give, in order for me to give testimony, I need testimony that's going to establish my reliability as a witness. So if we send along another guy to say that he's reliable, what don't I have?
A second one.
I don't have testimony. I just have some guy saying, yeah, I know him. V'atanya maseh sheba hu ve'edav imo laha'id alav. A maseh, that once a guy came, meaning a witness came, and who came with him? Edav, ha'edim shelo. Two edim. Laha'id alav. So Omar Rav Papa, my acher. So what does it mean when the Mishnah says you sent an acher, another another to testify. It doesn't mean another guy. It means zug acher, another pair of witnesses to testify. Achinami mistabra de ilote mahachi. If you don't say this, im einan makirin oto, my oto. What do I say? But what about him?
He's one guy. Why is that a question?
Mishpat k'tiv bei. Right, and as it's a mishpat, you need two witnesses.
Yeah, one of the guys, maybe one of the guys they do recognize, and the other they don't. So they only, you know, it doesn't mean both have to get not recognized.
Right. Mishpat k'tiv bei ki chok li Yisrael hu mishpat la Yaakov. Right. Ela mai oto hazug. Right. It means, in other words, when the Mishnah says, "Im ena makirin oto," no, in other words, the Mishnah is rejecting the Havamina that you just objected to. In other words, wait a second. We just said maybe when we say oto, it means it only works if you're sending two witnesses to begin with. No. You send one witness because maybe he can be mitzaref to another witness. But in order for him to be reliable on his own, he needs to have a pair of witnesses to testify that he is okay. Omar of Papa, my acher. Oh, I'm sorry, I skipped a line. Vatanya maase berebi nahorai shehalach etzel ha'ed lahaid alav. But there was a case that Rabbi Nahorai went with the aid from his town in order to testify. So what's the problem?
Again, he's a single.
Again, Rabbi Nahorai was a single. B'Shabbat right. B'Usha. Where's Usha?
In
the Galil. The Sanhedrin moved to Usha at a certain point. In other words, he was Mechal Shabbos. Rabbi Nahorai was Mechal Shabbos to go as the character reference for a witness. So how could you do that? There's really no purpose for him to go.
Why?
Because he can't give his single testimony. He's not testifying that he saw the Rosh Chodesh. He's testifying that Joe Schmo from my town is a reliable witness.
No, maybe somebody else will come.
They know that he's reliable. So but if he's reliable, then he can...
You go into Bet Din and you're reliable and you give testimony. If there's no corroborating testimony, it doesn't matter how reliable
you are. Yeah, but they know him, you know.
You're cynical.
No.
So Omri, Rabbi Nahorai, Sahade Achrina Hava, Bahedye. No, so you can say that. When we say that Rabbi Nahorai went... You heard the Satmar Rebbe came today?
Yeah.
Like half of Yerushalayim was closed down.
I thought that was messy, or he came with it.
It was messy, but not the soccer player.
How does the Satmar Rebbe come to Israel if he doesn't believe in Israel?
He doesn't believe in Medinat Israel, he believes in Eretz Israel. He will tell you that he's the only true Zionist.
How does it do with like border
it's a problem. No. It's a. First of all, you know that there are a lot of Satmar Chassidim in Eretz Israel. His children lives in Eretz Israel. He's got Einiklich who live in Eretz Israel. No. It's a problem. You know, because he might want to buy something, and in order to buy something, like there's no way around. Maybe he used credit cards today. He needs an American credit card.
Like that better.
Because you don't have to use the
Zionist money.
The Zionist money.
He's paying moms. The Zionist
government. So you're stuck. Maybe he brought all of his Coca-Cola with him from Muncie, but so. But it was in all of the newspapers and all of the news. Satmar Rebbe came.
Which Rebbe was this?
Aaron Teitelbaum, the son of Rabbi Yoel. So. You think he came by himself?
No, he came with 100 Hasidim.
Yeah, but you think like he got the Nadbag and he got to Kennedy, they said who packed this stuff? Like, are you bringing any gifts?
Didn't anybody give you anything?
Did anybody give you anything to? So he came with he came. Forget that he came with 100 Hasidim, right? He came with his gabbai and it came with his gvir, and it came with his... But what did the headlines say? So obviously Rabbi Noah Rai was not going to be Mechal Shabbos. It would not have been justifiable for him to be Mechal Shabbos to go, because there's no point in him going. Because
on his own.
So obviously it means that he went with someone else. But the other guy, he doesn't get the headline because of, you mentioned, the Rabbi Noah Rai came. Rav Ashi Amar.
Meaning he came with one person, didn't come with a whole entourage.
There would have been no justification for more than the two people to be Mechal Shabbos.
His driver also knew the.
Yes. Okay. Maybe it was his driver, maybe it was his Shamus, maybe it was his Talmud, maybe whatever it was. So Rav Ashi has a different read. Rav Ashi Amar, Rabbi Noah Rai, Sahade Achrina Hava Ba'usha. Right, so there was. They knew that in Usha there was somebody else. In other words, they knew that the second witness, who could testify to the reliability of the guy who saw the moon, was already in Usha. He didn't have to be a Mechal Shabbos. Va'azal Rabbi Noah Rai liitzterufe b'hadye, and Rabbi Noah Rai went in order to join that aide who was already there from before.
It's like stretching, like you're saying. I know there's one guy in Usha, but like, how do you know he's home?
Right, especially it's actually
maybe
there's another guy, and then you don't have to.
No, maybe one of the people in the Betin.
How? Because he was on Shabbat. How was he going to let the guys
go? You don't need any AD.
He had to take a chance.
No, because they knew that the Sanhedrin, right? In other words, in Usha was the Sanhedrin of Naharai, and the witness to the moon, Joe Schmo, are in a neighboring town. He sees Friday night, he sees the moon, Joe Schmo. So he says, Rabbi Noah Rai, I saw the moon. So Noah Rai says, good, I'll go. I'll testify that you're reliable. And we know, by the way, that our neighbor, who happens to be a member of the Sanhedrin, he's on duty right now. Because on the day of Kiddush HaChodesh, the Betin was on Konanut. Right? Because they might need to be Mekadesh the Chodesh. So he says, we know that we have like somebody else in Usha, in the Sanhedrin, who knows you, right? So
he wouldn't be in the Sanhedrin. This is actually, I think, important to the mission, because it says in Amakirimoto, if one guy, if you have in the Sanhedrin, you have one person is Mekirimoto, is that enough? If one of the Beit Din knows
that. No, so that's what the Gemara just rejected.
No, not the, you have, you were saying... So I'm saying there's a difference whether it's someone who's in the Beit Din or they just happen to know.
Okay, so all right, so my scenario might not be correct.
I'm wondering, is that sufficient? Do you have to have like two people in the...
I don't know. But my scenario might not be correct. But maybe they just knew. Maybe they knew that they had a second person in Usha who could testify. So if that's the case, what's the point of telling me all of this? In other words, what's the point of telling me the story that Rav Noah Rai went? Mahu detema. What might I have thought? What havamina are we going to prevent? What mistaken notion are we going to prevent by telling me the story that Rav Noah Rai went as a lone witness?
Exactly what we said earlier. That in case they might not have found the other guy there.
No. So it says. It might say, it says, Misfeka lo mechalin shabbata, kamash malon. Right.
You do. Steindl here quotes the Sfat Emet, with what we're talking about. He said, on the Mishnah, in Amekrimoto, Katav Sfat Emet, Shenireshe tzarech shekol chavrei beit adin yakiru et ed, Sheim loken, kemisupar lahalan Rabbi Norai, lo ya tzarech le'ed acher. V'yichlu litzarech et Rabbi Norai le'dayanim, sharei hu makir et ed, Ella Vadai, so if you call a Mekirion Torah, because you wouldn't, that would be, if you need to have two people, so you have to have everyone, the requirements be that everyone there must know.
Okay, but the Gemara said, and as the point of the Gemara here is that Rav Noah Rai went by himself, along with the aide, in the hope that they were going to find someone else, and that's enough to be Mechal Shabbos. Meaning there was a suffix, maybe they would have gotten there. And the second character reference would not have been there. Kamash Malon, you can still go. He can still be Mechal Shabbos in order to serve as to provide one leg of the testimony that the guy is reliable.
But it's always a suffix.
No, if there's two
always,
people.
Always a suffix.
No, there's always a chance that Edus is going to be knocked out.
You're going to get there and there are already 500 Edus in there. So it's always a suffix. Whenever you go to Shabbat.
Oh, and Achinami.
And right, so why is this more of a suffix than the usual suffix?
No, because in other words, here, if a guy sees the moon,
mm-hmm.
and he has no character references whatsoever, and maybe he really did see the moon, maybe objectively we know he's in possession of the Eidos,
right.
and maybe he's the only one in the world, or maybe he's the 500th guy in the world. He's allowed to be Mechal Shabbos in order to go to Yerushalayim.
But
from the time of the Takana,
right.
that you can only give testimony if you're known to the whole Sanhedrin, or if you have two character references. If you don't have two, if you're unknown to the Sanhedrin, and you do not have two character references, even though you're in possession of the true Edut, you have no authorization to be Mechal Shabbos, since your testimony is going to be rejected on a technicality. Right? If you are in possession of the Edus, and you're known to the Bet Din, but you happen to be one of the people that apostle Edut. Right? Can you be Mechal Shabbos to go testify?
You're apostle Edut because...
Because you're one of the reasons you're apostle Edut. You're a well-known pigeon racer. You're a well-known
gambler.
Dice man.
I don't know.
You're a card shark.
I don't know.
No, because since your testimony is going to be knocked off on a technicality, not a technicality. Since you are apostle Edut, you can't give Edut for another reason.
A woman.
Or a woman. Or a katan.
Didn't we say before that it's the day after the 29th, the Besdin wants to make that day Rosh Chodesh, they have the power to make that Rosh Chodesh even if no Edut didn't come. Did
you
say that before?
Yeah.
So then why should there be any...
Because it's no. First of all, they didn't always do. They didn't always have a need to, right? Or they didn't always have a need. Sometimes they left it up to what would happen, right? And also, there's still a mitzvah to do kiddush al pi re'iyah, unless there's the Rambam is clear. It's in exceptional cases that they would fiddle around with things, but on a month by month basis, maybe it was 2 days, maybe it was one day. Let's get one more line in here. Ki asa Ula, when Ula came to Bavel, that Ula was one of these characters, was, you know, he had the frequent flyer. Omar katshuhu liyarcha b'marava. He reported that the Rosh Chodesh was on such and such a date in the Ma'arav. What's the Ma'arav?
Eretz Yisrael.
So Omar of Kahana. The science. Omar of Kahana. Lo mi boy Ula. The Gavar Rabba, who the Meheman, right? Ula. So how do you? He shows up in Bavel, and he says Rosh Chodesh was on was 10 days ago on Tuesday.
That's not Kiddush
Rosh. Oh, it's not. So, but how did they know that they could adjust their calendar and keep Pesach or Rosh Hashanah or whatever day, right? It's according to one witness. They say, well, Ula, he's a Gavar Rabba. He's an important person. The Meheman, and he's reliable. Ela afilu inish the almanami Meheman. No, you don't need to be Ula. You could be Stamajo, who comes and says, and you're reliable to report that. What's today's date?
The 19th.
Stam, you're Stamagai. Right? I mean, you're a very nice guy, but you're Stamagai. But I can believe you that it's the 19th. Why?
Because he writes for a Mizrahi pamphlet.
not just because he carries around the collected wisdom of Western civilization in his pocket, and it says right there it's November 19th, right? But because people don't tend to lie about
something which is obvious,
something which is
easily checked.
Say, you can be mistaken. Don't believe me because I have no idea.
I feel interested. Almanami Mehemon, my time. How is it that even a simple person can be testify? To report a fact, kol milsa de avida le'agluye, anything that's going to be revealed, anything that's verifiable, lo meshakre ba'inshe. People don't tend to lie.
Why is it only Sheker? That's so strange.
Tanya Nami Hachi, bo echad besofa olam va'amar kadshu betin et achodesh ne'eman. So even somebody comes from the far distant land, and he says that Rosh Chodesh. Now it could be that people are mistaken, right? Later the Gemara discusses what happens when people are mistaken, but in the absence of knowledge that there's a mistake, people are believed to say. But again, what's this? This is not testimony, right? This is just reporting the facts. It's not fake news. Right? It's not a dut. It's not a dut. Right?
How is this different than reporting the fact that I saw the moon?
Because that's a form of a dut. That's a maase betin that requires a dut. That requires a dut so that the betin can make the determination to say mekudish or not.